I realized that for a busy entrepreneur or professional who was struggling with this, that lifestyle piece had to be implemented in a very specific way over a period of time. The truth is, at least the numbers that we use when men are using our system is about 2 years. It takes about 2 years of consistent work of living a specific lifestyle to actually start seeing those changes and give your subconscious the message that you are actually this type of man. And the first thing when it comes to changing your self-image comes down to, I'd say, the principles of how you view whatever is called a relapse or a slip.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Dadpreneur Rising. I'm excited today to introduce you to a friend of mine. I know he's been a client of Automation Agency for a long time. He was a long-time user of Automation Agency. He's like 5 years. But we personally really got to know each other last year, I think it was, at an event in Hawaii. If you've been listening for a while, you hear Taki Moore's name mentioned a little bit. We're in Taki Moore's boardroom program, and we had a really good chat about not only what he does, but the state of what it is to be man in today's society. And if you're a new listener, this is the podcast for you. If you are a dad who runs your own business and you're looking to better balance, how do you be a business owner without having to sacrifice home time? Or how do you be a more present, man at home with your wife, with your kids, without it meaning you're sacrificing the growth of your business? Or if you think you're balancing business and home life pretty well, then how do you ensure you're not sacrificing your health, your wealth, and your long-term ultimate happiness as a man? And today's society is quite anti-masculine. It's starting to swing the other way, but there's a lot pushing against you. And we're here to talk with JK Emezi. I hope I pronounced that last name right. Perfect. He's a certified addiction coach. And he's a sex and pornography addiction recovery coach, and he's a founder of Elevated Recovery. And so you should definitely check out his website over at elevatedrecovery.org. Now, his program, I'll give you a little insight. His program is really a premier program for overcoming porn addiction. His personal battle with pornography addiction lasted over 11 years himself, and during which traditional methods like therapy, 12-step programs proved to be ineffective. This led him to develop the Porn Reboot System. It's a unique approach that successfully helped individuals, especially high-performing professionals, to control their sexual behavior quickly and effectively. And we were just talking before we hit record that the stats and the data, and maybe we'll get into this, show that if you're a dad, especially a one with 6-year-olds and under, you have a high increased use of pornography. So this may be an issue that you personally are struggling with, or it may not be. And feel free to switch off if this is not your thing. But I will say this, even if you're not, you don't think you have an issue with pornography, you probably have some other vice. And what we're going to talk about, you could probably take some of those elements and apply that to other areas of your life. So I think it's worth tuning in and staying on the episode. So JK, hey, good to have you, buddy.
Hey, I'm glad that we finally made it. The conversation we had in Hawaii, just for the audience, I think Carl and I knew of each other, but we dropped deep. We were like walking to a restaurant and we just went from like 0 to like 10, like talking about super vulnerable stuff in a very short period of time. So I'm really excited to be here. I'm so excited about what you're doing with Dadpreneur. I'll tell you, from 12 years in the trenches, helping professional men, most of who are dads or becoming dads now, that this is a conversation that needs to be heard. And had all, actually.
And I think that's the thing, right? We went super deep. And, I hallucinate that the reason we could both go deep super fast is probably because a lot of the work we've done, in dealing with our own traumas, our own things. Now, porn addiction is not something that I personally struggled with, but I've had, struggles with codependency. People listening, you wouldn't know this. I've been through a 12-step program too. I did it for codependency. Similar backgrounds, I think it allows us to go, let's have a deep conversation fast with the people that we know we can. So let's have a deep conversation right now and let some people listen in. So, let's start maybe with some of your own journey. 11 years struggling with porn addiction, and now you're helping other men. Like, give us a bit of a background of how did you end up here, and what's been the key difference with what you're doing with men versus all the stuff you tried?
Yeah, well, bearing the name of your podcast in mind, I'm actually going to go back a little bit further than I usually do and just start off with when I was actually exposed, because I was exposed to pornography at 8 years old. And I'll explain exactly what happened, because at some point in this conversation, I think, I hope we'll get to the point where we talk about how to have the conversation with our kids too, so they don't end up where we ended up. So I'm 8 years old. I'm in the States. It's what you call a latchkey kid. So your parents leave you at home and alone, or they're out working. And so whenever you come back home, my mom and dad would leave the key under the flower pot. And it's just like, when you get back from school, let yourself in and lock the door. And we had like a cousin slash nanny who would come over and just, you know, sometimes make sure we were okay. One day she brought over a comic book. I was a huge comic book fan, and honestly, I still am. And I had to read this, but she wouldn't let me read it. I found it, and when I opened it up, it was pornographic in nature. The interesting thing was that the theme of it, and to get into it without triggering anyone, was a man got married and brought his new bride home. Then he goes off to run an errand, and his new bride ends up having sex with her father-in-law, his dad. And I'm 8. And everything in this is exaggerated. Everything is huge and massive. It's just crazy. And I did not know much about sex because I grew up in a Catholic conservative home. But at that moment, I was instantly able to decode what I saw. And that's the first problem with high-speed internet pornography. Regardless of your mental development, your age, or whether you are literate or not, you will be able to translate that into something which fits your worldview. And that thing which fits your worldview might harm other people, especially if you are not fully developed and you have not set your values and morals. I saw that being incapable of being physically aroused, I just felt this rush. I didn't know what it was, but in retrospect, I just had this neurochemical reaction. It was taboo. It was bad. And I got hooked on that. I realized, because I put it away, and any time for the next few years when I didn't get candy, didn't do well at school, felt lonely, whatever the case was, I would instantly seek nudity. I just didn't know why. Something happened to me. I just would feel that rush of adrenaline, and I liked it. And once I hit 13 years old, Carl, and I learned how to masturbate, then I was like, okay, this is magical. This is it. This is the reason for it. And it was off to the races all the way through my teenage years, medicating, anesthetizing, everything that happens to us as teenage boys, everything. And I just kept taking it up a notch all the way through my early 20s. It was only when I was about, I would say, 21 years old that I realized that I had a serious problem.
And how did you realize? I think that's a worthwhile conversation. Like, what was there a specific moment? Was there a series of moments? What made you go, hold on a second, I got to do something about this?
Yeah. You know, we use the term addiction, but to be honest, I just use that for marketing because that's something that the general public understands. I think the term addiction just comes with a lot of baggage that's really not relevant to helping men heal these days. I prefer to use the term of compulsive behavior. And it's, when did I realize that this was compulsive? It was when I tried to stop and I couldn't, even though it wasn't fun for me anymore. It wasn't serving any purpose. It wasn't a healthy coping strategy. No matter how many times I tried to stop, I just couldn't. So it's like you're there jerking off and you're done. You're looking down and it's pretty much a gummy worm. But you're like, I'm going to try and do it again. And what that does is that it brings up a whole bunch of strong emotions. It brings up shame. It emasculates you to a certain degree because you feel that you should have sexual control, but you don't. It also changes your entire biochemistry, right? You're filled with prolactin. You feel lethargic. You feel tired. You've got brain fog. You're not focused. And if you were raised in a conservative family, and if you have other issues that you haven't addressed, it's going to bring up your insecurities and your fears. All of these things, thankfully, they only affected my college life at that point. But with clients, I've seen it affect their business. I've seen it affect their relationship. It's affected every part of their life. And they can't talk about it because, well, it's shameful to admit that you can't control your dick, for lack of a better word. Yeah, but that happened when I was in college.
Yeah, well,
I'll share a quick story.
Please.
I got to a point where I realized that I couldn't have a relationship with anyone. I would see my peers in college just hooking up with girls, meeting girls. I couldn't do it. I started to realize, as one of my female friends, basically I was a super nice guy and this was a girl I was hanging out with, and Sophia was my friend, but I really just wanted to have sex with her. But she was brutal with me, and I thank her for it, because she told me one day, she's like, JK, you are so creepy. I was like, what? And I'm hurt because I'm trying to get with her and she just called me for creepy. She's like, you look at every woman that passes by. And she's like, you are so blatant about it. And that wasn't even my self-image, because I thought I was a nice guy. And I was like, what? I'm not a creepy guy leering at women. And she's like, yeah, you look every woman that walks by. She's like, of every age. I was like, oh my God. Now this messed me up. And in the evenings, I would go out to the bars. I would get drunk. That was the only way I could talk to women. And I'll try to hook up with women. Nothing would happen. I would come back and my routine was to get on a porn site, watch a bunch of pornography, and then I'd get on like a video chat site and you'd put in your credit card information and you'd chat with these girls and they'd tell you how beautiful you are and why don't you have a girlfriend? You're so handsome. You're cute. While they're racking up the numbers and your credit card's just being drained, it got to a point where that stimuli wasn't even enough for me. I had to start acting out. Back then, there was a site, Craigslist. I don't know if you guys have it over there in Australia, but
we know what it had is.
It had a personal section. And one of the personal section was called Anonymous Encounters. This is back to a very dirty, shameful part of my life. I've stepped past the shame, done a lot of work, but I would get on Anonymous Encounters at about 1 a.m. and I would just start searching for someone to have sex with. Thankfully, I was raised by parents who were very much disciplinarians. And so I was always scared before I acted out. And I think this, I tell this to my clients too, who are parents. The discipline that you input to your children early on, it does carry on. Because even though I was drunk and high sometimes, I'd smoked some weed, drank, watched porn, I would still think, oh my God, what would happen if my dad or my mom just saw me on the front page? Front pages tomorrow because I did some crazy thing or I got robbed. But one day, a girl, she sent a blurry picture, said that it was about 2 a.m. She says, hey, I'm babysitting and I'm free. I think she was like 19, 20, so she claimed. And she's like, I'm just horny and I want to have sex. And I was excited. Jumped into my car and I drove across town, thinking with my dick. I get over there and it's this really rundown suburb, Carl. And I pull into the back where she tells me to pull up. And I remember this was back in the day, I was using my BlackBerry, you know, a little keyboard, I was like, hey, where you at? Are you going to come out? She's like, yeah, let me just put one of the kids to sleep. The kid like woke up and it sounded really legit. I was like, okay, makes
well
sense.
Well practiced.
And she's like, yeah. She was just like, he woke up again. You know how it is. So I was like, now I'm like relaxed. And she's like, I think I see your car still running. Just pull up. I was still freaking out for some reason. So maybe I was just drunk. So I left my car on drive. It was an automatic. And as I'm sitting there excited with my erection, I can remember it. It's such a visceral, even right now I'm feeling it. There's like a shadow that comes around the side and somebody breaks the side, a driver's side window off my car. I just hear voices of men. I panic and I hit the accelerate button. I drive through the yard, go out the other, like I'm driving through like kids stuff, tricycles, plastic pool, drive out to the other side. And I remember driving home, just clenching the steering wheel, telling myself, you weren't raised like this, JK. You weren't raised like this. You weren't raised like this. You weren't raised like this. All the way home. That was the evening specifically that I realized that I had a serious problem. That was the peak of my behavior. And that's when I began the journey of trying to basically free myself from that.
Yeah, wow. I can't even imagine the actual scariness of that situation when it would have sunk in, right? You know, you're a mix of excited pleasure and nervous anxiety. And then, you know, not fully knowing, did you ever figure out what actually was the go, or you just...
There was no way I was even going
you
to
just,
try and
yeah,
that.
You just right. read it, like...
Yeah. I basically just swept that under the rug, which is what most people who struggle with compulsive behaviors do, and just pretended that it never happened. Some form of cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, definitely. Firstly, I want to thank you for sharing that journey. And listener, maybe you see some of yourself in that. Maybe you've had your own experiences. On this podcast, though, on this episode, let's try and delve in. If you haven't hit that window being smashed in moment, but maybe you're listening going, hey, maybe I do have some compulsive behavior problems. And as I said, we're going to be focusing on porn and sex addiction in this particular episode because that's JK's thing. But play along. Like, if that's not your thing, but you're noticing some other compulsive addiction behavior, or we might call it addiction, compulsive behavior, just make a note, because we all have it. I think that's one of the things as men, we don't acknowledge that we all have a vice. Some of us, you know, it's alcohol and drugs, like they're the obvious ones. But for others, it's work. For some men, and maybe this is you, your vice is work. You hide in work. It's the thing that gives you that addictive pleasure. Now, that can be constructive, but it could also can be destructive, right? For others, it can be gaming. For some people, it can be approval. For me, one of my biggest challenges as a recovering nice guy as well is approval seeking, whether that's from women, mostly from women, but it can also come from other men too, you know, this neediness that can come up. And so we've all got a vice. We've all got different things. And just, I think, to know that it's okay, that if you've got a vice, whether it's the same as mine, whether it's the same as JK's, whether it's the same as someone else, there's someone else out there who probably shares the exact same vice, compulsive behavior disorder. We won't call it disorder, compulsive behavior. So, all right, you had this experience and it took you down a path of trying to try all sorts of things. And I know that you found that 12-step programs, therapy, et cetera, haven't been useful, which allowed you to develop your own reboot system. I don't want to go super deep on why you think those other things haven't been useful. So we got two ways we can do it. You tell me how you want to go. We can go straight into kind of what makes yours different, or we can talk a little bit about why those didn't work. I imagine we probably hit why those didn't work when we talk about yours being different, but you tell me what would be better.
Yeah. Let's talk less about mine and more about the others, mainly because I think that's where most men are going to end up. The first thing to clarify is that there is benefit to any program out there. And if you're listening to this and you're just like, man, I'm so glad Carl brought up this topic because I really needed to hear this and you need help, I actually don't care where you get started. As long as you just get started, compulsive behaviors, addictions are no joke. And sometimes they can stay with us for so long and we don't have as much time as we think. So anything works. I tried those methodologies and the main reason that they didn't work for me was because all of them were stuck at a lifestyle. So for instance, 12-step groups have this idea that you have to live a certain way to be sober. And what that means, it's day by day. It's identifying as an addict. And I always had a problem with that because I never believed that my identity was that of an addict. And I was like, I'm not born to be an addict for the rest of my life. I have a problem. I'd like to overcome this. And I don't believe that this is lifelong disease. And I realized that I would never get as far as others were if I didn't agree with that. The second piece was giving responsibility away to a higher power. I think it's very important to have faith. I believe that's powerful. And I think if you're a religious or a spiritual person, you should dive deep into that. But I don't think that you should give away your power. One of the principles of our program is, well, not principles, it's just a saying we have, rather, that you are the best expert at yourself. I'm not the expert. I'm not the guru. I'm a coach. What that means is that I just show you that you can do something yourself and I remove your roadblocks. I'm excellent at doing that. But that's it. After that, you find the way. You're just like, I got it. Bye, JK. And I'm like, bye. I don't want to see you again. Don't, you're not, I'm not.
Yeah, you've done your job well and I shouldn't see you again. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to see you again. Like if you hit me up next time and we run into each other and your beautiful new wife is just like, how do you know that, man? I just want you to say like, hey, we hung out at some point in the past. You don't need to, oh, he was my addiction recovery coach. Oh, I'm so thankful. I don't want any of that shit. That's ideal for me. So that's the reason why those didn't work. Instead, what I found worked for a lot of men and for myself was the concept of rebooting. I don't know if you're going to release this as a video, but my behind me, there's a sign that's, it's actually a P with a little power button in the middle. And that stands for Porn Reboot, which is our flagship program. And the reason I came up with reboot was because the whole concept of recovery, which many of you who are struggling with this behavior will come in contact with, was sort of recovering that which you lost to your out-of-control behavior. Whether it is codependency, it's like, let's seek something. Let's find a place in your life where you didn't have this dependence. on whatever it was, validation, alcohol, sex, pornography, whatever it might be. But in reality, all we have is the present moment. If you were addicted to something at 25 and now you are 39 or 42, what the heck are you actually recovering? Like, what are you recovering, right? This might sound simplistic, but it's much easier to hit the reset button if your computer has a whole bunch of tabs, everything has slowed down. You're not like, oh, I'm going to open one more tab and I'm going to keep all of... No, just reboot the sucker and start fresh. The computer is still there. It does the same thing. It's just going to be a lot more efficient. So we believe in hitting the reset button and going through it in three very simple steps. You can change your habits, which you can watch on YouTube. Everybody talks about changing your habits. That's good. You can also change your lifestyle, which is the next step. But the final thing that has to change is your self-image. And for your self-image to change, the deep inner work needs to be done. Lifestyles change. And I want to warn everybody listening to this. I'm assuming you're a pretty ambitious guy. I'm believing that you want the best for your family. You're successful. Many men feel that just because they implemented some good habits and they have moderated whatever their addictive behavior is, that they're good to go. You're not. Because the moment your lifestyle changes, the moment you have your first kid, this happens all the time. We actually have a transition in our program, a special piece of our program that's just for dads who just had a kid. Because most men will relapse at that point. And they don't even know. They're like, no, I got this. I'm like, bro, you don't have it. Let us support you through this. The moment your lifestyle changes, you're going to engage in that behavior. So you have to change your self-image and no longer see yourself as a person who inherently has a need to engage in that behavior. I don't need anybody to validate me. I don't need sex. I don't need pornography to feel better. I have coping strategies for that. And you implement those in your life till they're seamless. They're part of your values. They're part of your principles. They become your standard. And you actually have pride in the fact that you don't engage in that, which is important because that's the only way you're going to teach it to your kids. You can't just casually tell it to your kids. You have to tell it to your kids with conviction. And the only way you can do that is by hitting the reset button, changing your self-image, doing the deep work. And as you do so, it's okay. Rebuild your values from there.
Yeah.
I went off on that.
Dude, I love that. There's so many threads on that I would love to pull. But I think let's start with, because you're right, you know, you can make all these lifestyle changes. And what you pointed to, when you first become a dad, especially on the porn or sex addiction, I know from my own experience, when Talia, my daughter, was born, my wife, my woman, was recovering naturally. Her interest in sex is low, and my own neediness and validation became high, and I became a very needy man, going like, I want sex, which was completely killing the bedroom. Like, the reason I can help men fix a dead bedroom is because I killed our bedroom for a period of time, and I had to figure out how to fix it because of how I was showing up. And it was in that exact moment, you know, I could have easily tried to fall on pornography. I didn't. But like, it was, I became needy for it because I was afraid that in that moment it would never come back. Right. And so you're right. That's a very pivotal time for many men, that the woman's not going to be interested. I can see how they would fall into, oh, let's go and fall back into old habits that they might have thought they got on top of. Let's pull on the thread though of how do you change that identity? Because you're right. You know, talking to a therapist is great. You know, I'm not a fan of talk therapy personally. Like, at the end of the day, therapy's therapy. Get whatever help you need. I agree with that. My own personal experience, I've done a lot of talk therapy from, you know, when I was 15 years old, starting with that. I'm now a big fan of focus therapy. Like, I see a therapist today, but it's trauma-based therapy. And we do very specific things like EMDR, eye movement recovery, to deal with specific issues. I'm a big fan of that versus just talking. So okay, lifestyle changes, but how do we change that identity? Because you've mentioned it, the lifestyle changes stuff is good, helpful, important to do, but at the core of our identity hasn't shifted. Now, obviously, you don't need to go and show your whole program, but what would you say? What would you say is like, where do we start?
Yeah.
But to go, oh, I want to change my identity, that's cool. But like, it's not, you don't just snap your fingers and your identity's changed.
Yeah. I've done like a bunch of NLP certifications, and I think a lot of people have. I tried to go to all the seminars in the hope that I would tap something or there'd be some sort of trigger and I would have some breakthrough. And don't get me wrong, I fully accept that, acknowledge all of these things helped me get to where I am today. But anything that felt like a breakthrough eventually plateaued. Anything that I felt like, or I even described back then as a shift, as life got hard and I got slapped around by life, I came to realize that those changes weren't as deep as I actually thought they were. So the first thing I want to acknowledge, Carl, and this also tells me that you've done the work, is these things do take time. In fact, I tried to do so much in-depth work with men. And then I started meeting men who had gone to so many retreats and they'd done plant medicine. They'd done everything else. One guy, I remember him crying. I was like, why are you crying? He's just like, I'm crying because Mother Ayahuasca, I made a pact with her that I would never watch pornography again. And I just did. And I'm here talking to you. And he'd been on like 14 or 15. He was in the teens. He'd been to Peru or wherever. So men had done a lot of deep work and they'd shown up still stuck with this. So I simplified it. I realized that for a busy entrepreneur or professional who was struggling with this, that lifestyle piece had to be implemented in a very specific way over a period of time. The truth is, at least the numbers that we use when men are using our system is about 2 years. It takes about 2 years of consistent work of living a specific lifestyle to actually start seeing those changes and give your subconscious the message that you are actually this type of man. And the first thing when it comes to changing your self-image comes down to, I'd say, the principles of how you view whatever is called a relapse or a slip, right? So the big thing is this. Many people see relapses or slips as a failure or something negative, or they have to start from the beginning, which is what traditional recovery teaches, which is why you will find that in a lot of traditional therapy, you are encouraged to stay in the lifestyle forever because they don't know how to teach you how to get out of that. And there are two reasons for that. The first reason is that they don't tell you to feel a certain way after a slip or relapse. They might, but they also imply that you start from the beginning. And the second reason is because they are more focused on the consequences of what happens, and you are more focused on the consequences than you are on the benefits. So here's what I mean. And when I have to, I'm like putting a mental check because this is stuff that can get deep, so I'll keep it simple. We say that slips and relapses are data. It's data because, first of all, you already have the self-image of a person who is inherently broken, right? You're just like, something's wrong with me. That's why I can't stop. That's why every woman I meet, I get super needy and super attached, and it's like devastating for me to like separate from her. It's like the end of the world. My whole identity just completely shifts, and my family and friends are just like, who the heck are you? Like every time you get with someone, you just disappear and we're all rolling our eyes. It probably happens to you, Carl. Just like, oh, there, Carl, there he goes again with the next girl he's with, and they all roll their eyes.
Yeah, no, definitely right? It did happen. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So you've lived that way for so long. And when it comes to like slips, and whenever you feel that, yeah, that's like I slipped, you're reinforcing that self-image. Like, yep, I'm a piece of shit. I'm a guy who has no willpower. I'm a guy who has no self-control. Something's wrong with me. We teach you and we prove to you using our worksheets and the exercises we have that when you slip, it's something logical and rational that happened, right? You either crossed a boundary or there was some self-care you didn't implement. Here's a simple example that's probably more relatable. Let's say you work from home and you're going through our program and we teach you how to identify your triggers and be more self-aware. And you start to realize that every time your wife leaves the house for something, that's when you're triggered. But we'll take you deeper. You'll go specifically to, I hear the door closing. Just all these things you're hearing them. I hear her getting in the car. I hear the door shutting. I hear her backing out. I hear the garage door close. And immediately my biochemistry changes. I'm taken over by this personality. And I go start going through my rituals, right? I make sure the door is locked. I do this. Maybe you track her and find your iPhone or whatever. Like, where's she at? How far away is she? And then you start engaging in the behavior, right? We will look at all of these things. Why did you do it? Maybe you did it because you know that you shouldn't be sitting in front of your computer for 2 hours straight, and you're an hour 30-minute guy or you're a 45-minute guy, and anytime you don't, you raise your levels of cortisol, and then you need to bring yourself down. And pornography or looking at something stimulating does that. Or perhaps you just don't have good boundaries. You know that you should have some sort of blocker on your device. You know that you should not be acting out or using a specific device for entertaining yourself, but you did so. So we teach you how to look at the data. The more you look at the data and teach yourself how to be rational about it, the less you're going to bring up some sort of negative emotion. That's the first piece. The second piece is we have something in our program called, again, all of this is about changing your self-image. We have something in our program called defining your reboot. Now, defining your reboot is important because, again, you are the best expert at yourself. You have to know where you want to get to. And most men submit to the program. So they're like, well, my therapist is going to tell me what being healed looks like. Or they're going to tell me, based on all the studies that were done, this is what a man who is not codependent or not dependent on alcohol looks like. The truth is, brother, nobody freaking knows except you. Human behavior is so varied. You have to look at your lifestyle, and it's a completely healthy and loving thing for yourself to actually decide that this is how far I go, and this is how far I am willing to go. This is what it is for me. So there are a bunch of questions in there, but the one that's most relevant is one of our final questions, which is we ask you to define your reboot. Mine was control. For some men, it's freedom. For others, it might be peace, whatever the case may be. We bring it down to one word. And the final question is, will having control, will it lead you towards happiness, or will it help you escape the pain that you were experiencing in the past? Basically, is whatever the definition of your reboot, is it running away from pain or running towards happiness? This is critical because the truth is, you should be running towards, ideally, I'll just say the one you should. You should be moving towards a happier version of you. You have to define the self-image that you want in the future first and actually stop working backwards towards it. But that never happens in a traditional program because you have been trained to only look at the past and the consequences of your action. When you are trained to look at the benefits, when you are trained to define it as who you are going to become, then moving towards that self-image becomes a reality. Self-image, the final thing I want to say about this, Carl, is such a tricky thing when it comes to addiction because, first of all, a lot of the data is skewed due to shame. Like a lot of men just will not share. The second thing is men actually get so exhausted trying to change themselves that in reality, there are these periods of times where they're just okay with it. They're like, ah, screw it. Like, I got to focus on scaling my business first. I really don't have time for this whole recovery thing. And there are these stretches of time where they're not doing anything to start working on it. So when you talk about self-image, it's very rare to find somebody who will sit down and tell you, like, my self-image is no longer that of somebody who uses alcohol, or my self-image is that of somebody who no longer needs pornography. Because many people who think they're there, they're just going through this middle period where they're just like, I'm not going to think about it. And hopefully it's gone away. If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And one of the things that you said that I really resonated with was the idea of you going to the therapist or the 12-step program or whatever you might be going into. And it's, you're kind of surrendering. You're moving more into the feminine energy of like, I'm looking to be led to, you know, the solution, as opposed to what you're talking about there is empowering a man to go, no, this is the core of masculine work that I've done is you need to do one of the things that I've learned to do. And we get some of the guys in Dad Pernod to do is we call it a leading expedition. I didn't come up with it. I learned it through another program, but it's exactly okay, that. A leading expedition is this. You set your vision. You get really clear on what's your vision. Where do you want to go? Like what you said, like you're defining your future. And then you lead yourself. So often as men, we look for others to lead us, but it's lead yourself. It's like, here's my vision. Okay, what's my problem? You know, what's my problem that's getting in the way of that vision? And, you know, it might be like, I learned it in a relationship course. So it might be like, well, my vision is having sex every, you know, two times a week or whatever, but what's the problem? Well, the thing that's getting in the way is she rejects me when that happens. Okay, great. And how do I feel when that happens? So we go from problem to then feeling, checking in. How do I feel when that happens? Well, I feel rejected. I feel this. I feel that. Okay, great. Then self-judgment, but in a loving way. Like, as men, it's okay to, I'm a believer that it's okay to judge with devotion, with love, right? And so I might, in that mind, what a friend would probably say to me is like, well, just man the fuck up. Maybe that's what I, it's like, stop being a wimp and just, maybe that's what I need to hear. But I do that to myself. So it's like, okay, here's my emotion. I allow myself to feel the emotion. Yeah, I feel this. I feel, oh, it's not fair, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. Now, bit of judgment. What would you say to a friend who was saying the same thing to you? Dude, like, just man up. Okay, got it. Cool. From there, what am I going to do? What's my next action? And that is a leading expedition. Vision, really clear on where I want to go. What's the problem that's getting in the way? What's the emotion that brings up? What do I need to actually hear that you'd probably say to a friend who was telling you the same sob story? And then, great, what's my action? And that simple process of leading yourself, that empowers us as men, you know, as opposed to being like, I don't know what to do. Help me solve this problem. Well, okay.
I'm curious. Like you said that you dealt with and just whatever you're comfortable with codependency. Was this helpful for you with, because I assume that with codependency, there are just so many other emotions bubbling within the surface, stuff from your past as well. What was it like doing a leading expedition for something like that? Especially when, let's say it's a sexual rejection and you still have the urge, right? How would you deal with that versus the like, what do I do now? What if the next time? How did you handle that?
Well, the beauty of a leading expedition is, you don't do it once. You know, it's not a one and done, like, oh, I've done this and now I'm solved. It's literally when you're stuck in the swamp of emotion. I don't know about other listeners, but as a man who I think a lot, I'm a deep thinker and I feel a lot and I can get caught up in my feelings. I can get caught in this woe is me victim swamp in certain moments. Not all the time, but there are these moments, right? That's when a leading expedition is so powerful because it's allowing yourself to feel. But one of the mistakes that I would make in relationship previously is I would take that swampy feelings to my woman, right? I would come to her and I'd be like, oh, this is what I'm feeling.
Cringe.
Yeah, totally. And I'm wondering why, you know, why we're having relationship problems because we've been sold a lie as men. I know you and I have spoken about this, but like we've been sold this lie of men because women are like, I wish men would be more, open up more and be more emotional. That's what they tell us. And society tells us, oh yeah, you know, you should have a beautiful, you know, if you have an unconditionally loving relationship, you should be able to share your vulnerabilities with your woman. But I'm sure there are some cases out there. My experience has been that is the kiss of death to, it might not be the kiss of death to your relationship, it's the kiss of death to passion, attraction, sexual intimacy, at least at the level you probably want it to be. And so it's not about men, you shouldn't have feelings. Absolutely. We're human. We have fucking feelings. It's okay to feel. Just don't go to your woman to share them. Come to other men. You know, come to a program like JK's or mine or find a men's group or just some friends. Like share them or just do a leading expedition and share them with yourself or with a therapist. You know, if you just have someone you need to share it with. But don't bring it to your woman. And that was a mistake I made. I'd be stuck in this swamp and then I would be looking for someone else to get me out of the swamp. The beautiful thing about a leading expedition is it's like, okay, future focus again. Let's get clear. Let's get vision. All right, where do I want to be? What's my vision for this? Oh, my vision is we have a relationship like this. So my vision, and it doesn't have to be relationship. Like, as I said, I learned that from a relationship course. So I've applied it mostly to relationship, but you can do the same thing in business. I'm having this business problem. Where's my vision? Okay, what's my problem? How do I feel when that happens? Great. You know, what's my loving judgment that needs to be said about those feelings once I've felt them? Great. Okay, now what's my action? What am I going to do from here? And it just gets you out of, for me, it gets me out of the swamp and gets me clear on what's my next step. And doesn't mean that I won't maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 days later, be back in a swamp and I have to do the process all over again. But it's just, it's a tool to get you out of the swamp and stop you from potentially sitting there in stagnation, which is very easy to happen.
It's so interesting how your experience, like working your way out of codependency, parallels with the experiences of many of my clients and myself too. A lot of the entrepreneurs I work with are also, a good portion of them are deep thinkers. I call their process of stewing, catastrophizing. So something has happened and they could just deal with it in an emotional, but they will take it a step further where there are all these doomsday scenarios where they're just, it's a major pity production, right? It's a huge production of just how shitty they feel and why life has dealt them these cards. And they go so deep into it. The only difference is, in that case, they keep reinforcing the behavior of acting out sexually, which takes them deeper and deeper and deeper. That was the first parallel. The second one, Carl, was what you said about the masculine and feminine. And I just loved that. I remember we really connected on that, when it comes to men struggling with an out-of-control behavior, especially those who are conservative, there's this belief in some guys that the truth will set you free. And so they show up. Often they'll go to their therapist, and their therapist is like, my goodness, you have kept this hidden from your partner for so long. Oh, you must go through the disclosure process. You must disclose, bring him in together. And they tell me, JK, I'm going to do this because I feel a tremendous amount of guilt. And I'm just like, don't be a piece of shit. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, have you thought of your partner? Have you thought of the impact of this disclosure on her? Can she handle it mentally? I was like, and have you taken responsibility? Oh yeah, that's what I'm doing. Telling her is taking responsibility. I was like, no, it's not. First of all, you were dealing with this problem well before you met her. You were dealing with this. This is not her problem. She did not sign up for this. This is not in the agreement. I was like, you have to consider that first. You have to do that work. The second thing is, what do you think is going to happen when you tell her? And they're like, well, I don't know, man. See, it's a risk. That's the risk I'm taking. I'm like, two things are going to happen. Right? Either there's going to be some form of her being upset and shocked, and in an extreme case, she's going to be traumatized, or she's going to be cool with it and go like, yeah, totally not a big deal. But it's unlikely that the latter is going to happen to you, because you're going to make this disclosure thing a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is, what do you think is going to happen to you? And they don't want to say, but we dig deep, and here's the reality. They simply haven't taken responsibility of the burden of the guilt and shame they're feeling. And they're simply handing it off to someone else, which is what they're doing. They don't know they're doing that. And they're feeling good about themselves. And they don't realize that this is destroying their relationship. Furthermore, what happens is this. I have a lot of guys who come to me and they're like, JK, you were wrong. I was like, oh, well, tell me what happened. And they're like, well, she was actually very compassionate and she was understanding. And I'm like, that's a good start. That's always good. And she offered to be my accountability partner. Oof. And I'm definitely doing that because she made that the condition. She said, I'm really going to work with you on this and we're going to get through this together. And I was like, now your relationship is definitely doomed, bro. And they're like, what do you mean?
Depolarized the entire scenario. Yeah.
I know, Carl's here. Like, you're like, ouch. This happens so often. I'm like, here's what's going to happen. Here's what happened. You told her about this. You told your partner about this. And yeah, she opened up because you've been closed off while you were dealing with this behavior. You've been stewing in your pity production. And now finally you sat down and you opened up to her. She loves the fact that you're being vulnerable. And in this moment, she doesn't think of the consequences. So of course she's going to take what she can get from you. So she connects with you. And this reminds her of when you guys first got together and you were open and blah, 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 blah. And now she's like, let's do something together. It's a project that we can work on. But firstly, she's too close to the project. Secondly, sorry, bro, but she's not a guy. So she really doesn't understand what's happening. And what happens with a compulsive behavior is you're going to slip and relapse. Now, in our group, guys have accountability partners who are other busy men who understand. So when you slip, we know exactly what happened. When you lie to us, we're going to call you out because most of us were just lying our whole lives. So we're like, bro, just cut the bullshit and you're like, okay, you guys already know. But when you slip the first time, she might be understanding. The second time, she might be understanding. But the fourth or the fifth time, she's going to think, what the heck is wrong with you? Like, why does it feel that you're my kid? Why do I feel like I'm babysitting you? Why do I feel like I'm being responsible for you? And here's the thing. Women don't sleep with their sons and are not sexually attracted to their sons. And the moment you change that dynamic, it's almost impossible, factually speaking, to get back. It takes so much work. And it's even harder when you're a busy business owner with so many other responsibilities, right? Carl, I saw you had some facial reactions. Do you relate to that?
Yeah. I would actually add that the moment she's like, hey, I'll be your accountability buddy, that's the moment that firstly, she's not a dude. My experience of the feminine is accountability is not their strong suit, right? Like that, you know.
Ooh, dude, that's so good. I'm actually going to take a note on that one. Because that's a fact.
Like, you know, Like, it just, as soon as it's like, oh, I'll be your accountability buddy, it's like, no, you can say, oh, thank you so much, but no, I've got that elsewhere. Because as soon as you do that, you're saying that I can't be accountable to myself, which in that moment, subconsciously for her, she's like, well, this dude can't take control of his own dick, can't control his own urges. Like, this guy doesn't have it under control. How can I trust him to take care of me? How can I? And this is the instinctual, society doesn't really want to talk about this. Well, some pockets do.
You're canceled, man.
But like, instinctually, she's not built that way. And whether she's conscious, you know, it's beautiful. Cerebrally, in her mind, she's offering this beautiful thing and you might go, great, but you're buying into the bullshit of you believe she's able to do that, whereas deep down she's losing all respect for you. Even if it's not in that moment, at some later point when there's a fight, and you also said like she'll be, you know, at number four, she might be like, oh, you know, what's wrong with you? Probably earlier than that, though, she's going to be like, what's wrong with me? Because if you're
better, dude,
you know, yeah. if it's like, hey, you're needing to go and seek pornography, then you don't, like, her instinct, her mind is going to start saying, well, there's something wrong with me. You know, you don't love me. If you loved me, you wouldn't need these things. You wouldn't need to look at other naked women. You wouldn't need that. And even if she's read literature, even if she's been told how it's normal and here's why men are attracted to other women and all these things, her emotional center is in that moment going to go, what's wrong with me? And that same thing is going to be driving a wedge in your relationship. Like, it's a strong point of view, but it comes from lived experience. It's okay as a man to have emotions, but just don't put the burden on your wife or your woman. Like, bring that stuff to other people and let, you know, it can be a woman in a therapy session. I don't care, but show up with strength. And it doesn't mean you're never vulnerable. It's not about going, hey, I've got my shit together, I'm a Superman. Like, women see through that. But it's about picking those things. And when you share vulnerably, you're not sharing a problem looking for a solution. You're sharing vulnerably to go, I really struggled with this, but I got a plan. Like, I got it under control.
I got to say, like, there are very few guys I speak to. And I got a lot of respect for you. For those of you who didn't hear, I am a client of Carl's. A customer client of his service for many years. But I rarely find people, business owners, who have done the level of work you've done. And I know you've done this because just the few things you were sharing about the feminine, whatever your sources are, like, kudos to them and kudos to you for going that deep. What you said about her feeling that there's something wrong with her is something that the average guy just doesn't see and doesn't understand. And I try to explain this so much to my clients that you cannot explain any of this to her logically. You're right. The literature, the courses, the education doesn't work. The man also has to change his self-image in the way that he interacts with women, which is also a very challenging part because there's so much that is not about explaining. Actually, there's so much that's about keeping your mouth shut and acting a certain way and actually not doing anything. And he was just like, but if I did that, she would feel this way and feel this way and feel this way. And I'm like, your responsibility as a man is, as a man, you should be able to ride the wave. I think it was David Deida who said, you have to be able to ride the waves of the feminine's emotion, just like a sailor rides the ever-changing seas. Your ability to read it, your ability to just surf it and not crash is what is going to sustain your relationship. And many times, it's not going to save it, but it's really going to help you navigate the really stormy times. And most men just can't resist. I teach something called AVR, which is acknowledge, validate, and reassure, which is a method for men who are dealing with partners who are dealing with betrayal trauma. And when she comes at you with these strong emotions of, especially when she's traumatized, she's going to exhibit some symptoms. They're going to be panic attacks. She's going to just randomly have these thoughts, which seem crazy. Like, she's going to bring up someone from the past. So that girl that we talked about, you said that it was in 2017 that happened with her. But actually, I think in 2019, in November, you texted her, blah, blah, blah. Now, you can't go, hey, listen, I thought we already had that conversation and we already resolved that with it. You do any of that? Brother, you are dead in the water. You always want to, and this is just the free tip for the brothers who are listening to this, it's acknowledge where she's at. It doesn't matter. There's no right or there's no wrong. She shows up, acknowledge it. You know what? I can see how you would feel that way. Like, based on my behavior, I can see why you would have that that impact on you. This is the thing where I've gotten into it with a lot of therapists, and they don't like me for this, but my clients' results speak for me. I'm not a big fan of apologizing. There is a time to apologize, and there's a time to do the work. And after a certain point, apologies are only a reminder for your spouse about the person you used to be. When you're just like, I am so sorry that this happened to you. I'm so sorry it happened. All she does is just, she just remembers and she just gets more and more angry. You simply acknowledge without apologizing. You validate the emotion, which simply means letting her know as a human being that she has every right to feel that emotion, regardless of what triggered it in whatever language you want to do. And then finally, the logical piece is reassuring her that work is going to be done. You know, you brought this up, and because you've acknowledged and validated, and not lip service or pretending or using this as a formula in a manipulative way, you actually acknowledge, you actually validate, and you reassure her based on that what you're going to do. You know what? I'm actually going to bring this up with the group of married guys on Saturday mornings we meet. I'm actually going to bring this up and let them know you brought this up, and I'll see what they have to say, because I think one or two of the guys, their partners, deal with this. Or I'm going to talk to my coach or my therapist about this. You don't need to give her a solution. Men are so solution-oriented. You just need to reassure her that you're going to do something about it. Then go and do that thing.
That's to make sure you do whatever you said you were going to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely the most important piece.
Because otherwise, trust is completely right. Like one of the first exercises guys in the Dadpreneur program go through on the relationship side is you know, an audit of broken promises. Like, what are all the things you said you were going to do that you've not even thought about, that you didn't realize were a promise? You know, getting a little off topic here, but one of the things that many entrepreneurial men do, if your business is not going great right now, you're suffering through a challenging time, finances are tight, maybe you're putting in more hours than you'd like to be, and you're reassuring, you know, we're often very optimistic men as entrepreneurs. And so I had one particular client, you know, he didn't realize that he was constantly promising things that he couldn't keep to his wife, because he's like, oh, things are going to get better, because he's painting the picture, his excited vision of here's what life's going to be. But he didn't know that as he's sharing that to try and reassure her, she's taking it as hard, cold promises of things are going to change. And when the market, what things he tried didn't work, he's breaking promises and eroding trust without realizing it. And it's like, you've got to be really careful what you promise. You know, you can paint a vision of here's what I'm working towards, here's where I want to get to. But if you're using language like here's what it's going to be like many entrepreneurial guys convince themselves, oh, life, you know, we're going to have $10 million in the next 5 years or whatever. You can't know that with fact. You can't promise that with fact. You want to say that to yourself? That's fine, but don't say that to your woman. Make sure you make very clear on what promises you're making, because you're going to have to live up to them. You're going to have to live up to them. So yeah, if you are making a promise, I'm going to do this thing, do it, because she'll know whether you did or you didn't, even if you think she won't. And that's, you touched on too, like a big mistake so many men make is we look at our wives, girlfriends, women, whatever you want to call them, as men. Just like they look at us as hairy women and they wonder why we don't think and act like them, and that causes their own frustrations, and that's their work to figure out. But we look at them as kind of beautiful men. You know, we want to have conversations that are very logical, and why don't you think this way? And it's, you know, we, as you said, we had that conversation. We dealt with it. It's like, yes, logically we may have had that conversation, but emotionally right now she's feeling some emotions and she needs some help to get through that. And that's your gift, your responsibility, your opportunity as a man to be the man who can help her through that emotion. So I love this stuff. And I love that we've had a chance to talk about it.
I actually want to add one more thing to that with your responsibility to help her work through the emotion. I think it's also important, Carl, for guys to know the difference between the times that we have to help our woman through it and the times that it's her responsibility to do so. Because I think a lot of men who are also evolving and growing and who get this have a tendency to overdo it too. So, and that decreases attraction as well. There are times when you can just chill and realize that she has people that she can call and get on a 3-hour call with and bitch about stuff. And guys tell me too, they're just like, oh my God, I don't know if she's going to leave me. She's so mad at me. She's so this, and I really want to communicate with her. I really want to communicate, bro. I'm like, dude, it's okay. He's like, but she's talking to her friends and her family, and they're just, I know her friends and family are just like, oh my God, Carl or JK, really a piece of shit. I told you about him. I told you he was going to do this, blah, 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 blah. I was like, it's okay. As long as you are not losing your center, as long as you are not being ungrounded and you are calm and clear, let her get those emotions out and stop being so outcome dependent on the conversations she's having with other people about you. I think a lot of men get into this control zone where they're like, okay, so I'm learning how to communicate with my partner. Now I must control it. It's about us. And there's some insecurity that comes up when she starts talking with other people about it. So she starts saying like, oh yeah, you know, I and Carl have been going through this. And she comes back and she's like, Carl, so I talked to this person about you. Like, you talk to them about that. That's something we're dealing with because you're raw and it's your vulnerability. I think it's important to just know there are times where your partner can work things out with other people and release her frustrations there. And it's important for you to learn how to sit with that insecurity and name it as it comes up. I feel insecure. I feel judged. I feel exposed, right? I feel that I'm not in control of my relationship right now. And it's important for those of you listening to know that whether this is due to some addictive behavior, or you're just going through a tough time in your relationship and business, you're going to learn over time that there are going to be periods that don't seem that they're going to end. And it's long periods of insecurity and self-doubt. You will find, and it's an important part of your maturing as a business person and a person in a relationship, that it always passes. You know, like, I'm sure Carl and I are sitting here really talking back in retrospect to things that when they were happening, we were just like, God, is this ever going to end?
100%. Yes. And that's the hardest part is we convince ourselves, and your woman does this too, that we convince ourselves that this is the worst thing ever because our anxiety comes from the idea that it's never going to end. It's always going to be this way. That's where it's coming from. And I wanted to add something to what you were saying, but that the idea has actually escaped me just as I'm like, I want to tell you what I was, and now like my brain cannot find what the point was that I wanted to add. It's just, it's super important in, as you say, like on our journey as men, to learn to communicate and know when to communicate, when to, and not fix. I think it's a big mistake as men. We try to fix things. You know, that's what we do. And you might also find you might be in a relationship dynamic where it's actually your woman trying to fix you. And that, you know, she's stuck in a lot of masculine energy, trying to solve problems, which is a burden to her and it probably irritating to you, right? Probably what's going on for you. That's a whole nother conversation.
That's a whole different one. I'm starting to realize so many, you're right, there's so many directions this could go. Because when you were talking too, I was just like, peg, and I was like, nah, I'll just talk about this one. But it's great stuff, man.
It's important work. And at least in many of the circles I travel in, it's not, you know, there are circles that it's talked about, but there's a lot that it's not. And it's like the beauty of the internet that's allowed for someone listening in, you're hearing some of this information. And if anything we've said really resonated with you, definitely, you know, reach out to both JK and myself. Whether you become clients of our programs is irrelevant. Like, just if you need some pointers of a book to check out or whatever, I'm speaking for JK here right now, so it's not my right. But I can tell you from me, I'm very happy to point you to in the direction of a book or something.
Same thing. I think that's the best place to start. It's most people are not ready to just dive into the deep end. And unfortunately, even if you're listening, chances are you're going to try and convince yourself that you can either do it on your own or you're going to try and convince yourself that there's an easier way to do it. And sometimes a book might be the trigger that you need to actually take action. Take a little bit of action, get some proof, and then you're good.
And it'll be, at least from my own experience, have you ever read a book, got something from it, and then gone back and reread the book and got something completely different because you're different. You've shifted and changed. I remember, you know, we're talking decades ago now, but like I remember I was given a pickup book when I was like maybe 18 and I read this book and I was like, I could never do that. You'd get slapped. You'd do that. And then I think maybe it was a decade later, I read the same book and I was like, I did that. I've done that. You know, the shift of experience changes. It was called The Lay Guide by Tony somebody or other. Funny enough, it was my sister that gave me that as like an 18th birthday present. Like, she was clearly telling me that I needed to up my game. But I remember reading it and going like, no way you could do that. Whereas then I learned later in life, you can almost, in the dating world, you could get away with anything as long as you did it with confidence and a smile.
Shocking what you can get away with in the dating world. Yeah. Crazy.
Confidence and a smile. It's about the delivery, not the words used. It's the energy behind the word. And it's the same in relationship, though. Like, so much of it's about whether something comes across masculine or feminine, like even an apology, right? It all comes from the energy that it's coming from. And it's hard to personify what and explain really what that is. But if you've experienced it and you've lived it, you'll know the difference between, please forgive me, you know, this neediness of like, I'm a piece of shit, I'm a failure, you're coming from shame, guilt, whatever, please forgive me, please take me back, versus, you're right, it'll never happen again, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. You know, like, there's an ownership that can come from that, and the energy and how it's received, the energy of you as a man, how you give it, completely different. But you could technically use those same words with different language, you know, different energy, and it'd be received by yourself and by your partner very differently.
I think one thing on that too, because I started doing some reaction videos. So I got a YouTube channel. I have like 1,300 videos. And YouTube has become really crazy these days, as in nobody's watching anything. And I'm not a dancing monkey. I'm not going to do some crazy stuff.
You're not going to start doing some TikTok dances?
Yeah. I'm like, nah, that's not me. But I started doing reaction videos because I started seeing a lot of content coming out by women that was manipulatively critical of what you just expressed, Carl, where men who apologize in a masculine way today, men who seem almost stoic, but are actually contrite, like you realize, like, yeah, that was a messed up thing. I shouldn't have done that. And I apologize. I'll do better. It's not going to happen again. Right? Yeah, come here. Give me a hug. Mwah. Like, that's not going to happen again. And that's it. It's just like, I am so sorry, babe. I'm so sorry. Like when you do it the former way, I've literally seen that being described as narcissistic. Like, do you know what I'm talking about? They just start saying, like, they're applying narcissism to anything that is masculine. They're mislabeling misogyny. And I didn't care much about it because I was like, this is silly. Like, real men would know better. And then a lot of the clients who started coming in would start feeling conflicted because they were like, yeah, she said, I'm a narcissist. I'm like, you're not. There's no way you would go this deep with me or Dr. Eastman or Dr. Rankin, the therapist in our program, and be a narcissist. Like, that's not possible. You are not a narcissist. You may have narcissistic traits, which we all do. Many entrepreneurs,
especially in today's society with social media, it's brought it out of many of us.
So many of us acknowledge it. But those of you listening, please, if that sounds weird to you, and if you feel like, oh man, I'm being an asshole and I was labeled as an asshole, what really matters is how you feel on the inside. If you genuinely feel that it was something that was delivered with, you were actually sorry, you were projecting loving kindness towards the person and you were caring, you're good, right? But the delivery does matter.
That's the deal. I think the piece that I've seen often is missed is because even the example you gave, the way you said it, again, the energy can be different. It could be said in that way, but it can miss what I call devotion. Right, which is that loving energy to the other person. What's the difference between control, like domineering control, and loving devotion? Is that devotion piece of the heart. Like, you know, you can have a really strong masculine directive, do this, do that, like, come here, give me a hug, I'm sorry, you know, it'll never happen again. You can have that in a really domineering, controlling way, and you can also have it in a really loving, masculine, healthy way. And the subtle difference is, what's your inner state? Are you doing it in a way where you're kind of seeing yourself as better than them and you're like, oh, I'm guilty of this. I can logically be like, oh, logically, I can see what's going on in your experience. You're just having this emotional thing. And I can get on my high horse and be like, oh, yeah, it's okay. But she feels it. She feels the difference when I'm in that. That's when I'm showing up in a more narcissistic trait because I'm going like, oh, I've got this sorted. I get what's happening. I see logically my story of why you're behaving that way. I'm going to do this and say, I'm sorry. I don't think I've done anything wrong. And it's the big one, guys. I don't know if you've ever done this. I used to do it a lot. Would be like, I'm sorry you feel that way. Like, if you've done a lot of spiritual work, right? You'll be like, oh, it's not my responsibility to take your emotions on. So I'm sorry you feel that way. Oh, that is not acknowledging their emotion. That is just saying like, oh, I'm sorry you're feeling that way. That's condescending. And I'm guilty of it. I've done it multiple times, more than I would like. And similar to what JK said, I want to just reaffirm something, though, that I said a bit earlier. In his example of an apology, he said, it'll never happen again. I'm really conscious when I'm making an apology like that, that if I say it'll never happen again, it better never fucking happen again. If I truly don't think I can promise it'll never happen again, I say, I'm working on that. I'm working on it. Or I might say, I want it to never happen again. Now, you can't control what story she takes from what you said. But for me, in my own integrity, I need to make sure, you know, if I say that it'll never happen again, I'm confident it's something that'll never happen again. Like, let's say you've had a, you know, we talked about porn. Let's say you shared that something slip up happened in porn addiction. If you say it'll never happen again, if you can't truly promise that, which you possibly can't, don't make that promise. Find the promise you can make. And it might not be what she wants to hear. She might, like, Liz and I have had moments where she's like, I want to hear it'll never happen again. And it's like, mate, I can't promise that. I can't. I understand that's what you want. I would love to give you that promise, but I can't make that promise to you. And that's for my own integrity. Even the nice guy in me would want to say, yeah, babe, it'll never happen again. But I'm just setting myself up for failure and the relationship up for letdown. And I don't want to be that man. And so keeping our word is just such an important thing, you know, to ourselves, to our women, to the people around us. Now, before we wrap up, we've gone in lots of conversation direction. I've loved this episode, but I'm conscious of time. I do want to get to one thing that you touched on at the beginning before we wrap up. You were 8 years old when you started, and you said you would love to see an opportunity to talk about what, as parents, we can do to expose, you know, help our kids. What have you got some thoughts? I personally, you know, I've only got a two-year-old daughter. I'm not there yet, but I'd love to know if you've got some thoughts around this for us as parents. What can we do? I mean, because it's so different. Like when you and I grew up, it was Playboy magazines and comic books and things. Now it's type a few things online and boom, everything's in front of you.
Yeah. First of all, unfortunately, you're going to have that conversation much sooner than you anticipate for that very reason, because of technology. I'm not an expert in this. First of all, I don't have kids. But the crazy thing is, I have so many kids emailing us. YouTube, there was a point where we were like the only visible service because we were the only one actually marketing it specifically for pornography addiction. So we would get 7-year-olds, 12-year-olds just saying, I don't know how to talk to my parents, but I trust you. They were implying that they trusted, like, dude, help me out. I keep doing this. What I have to say is that it's first acknowledge that it's, this should be obvious. It's not a matter of if, it's when your child is going to get exposed to pornography, unfortunately, in today's world. And I don't think that there is a right time to talk to them. Some people would throw in like, oh, like before their teens or during their teens. I have seen, just to give you guys context, I've seen people hand their kids those little rubber protected iPads or tablets when they were 5 years old, and their kids were exposed to pornography playing Minecraft, right? From some crazy mod. I've seen all sorts of things. I think that whenever you decide to do it, I think it's important to tell them what sex is, explain pornography, but explain it from the point of intimacy. Letting them know, and hopefully you have a relationship you can use as an example, that, and this is what I found that many parents who've talked to their kids get this, that pornography lacks intimacy. And what mom and I have, when we do that, it has intimacy. I found that to be the shortest way to get there, the thing they remember the most. And when they get exposed to it, they will search for that. And they're like, there's no intimacy in this. The benefit is that it also extends to their personal sexual lives, because they will also begin to prioritize intimacy. Don't worry about it. You're not depriving your child of anything. They'll have the crazy sex if they're meant to at some point, and just the primal piece of it. But if intimacy is placed as the priority, then that becomes the lens through which they see everything that's sexual. And I really think that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things that I think are really important to reaffirm. The idea of intimacy and explaining what that is, you know, it can be very, you know, some people intimacy equals sex, but intimacy is deeper than that. It's the emotional connection component to it that, you know, I think also, again, I don't have kids old enough to have had this. This is me spitballing from my mind, but you're showing them too that it's, you know, pornography isn't, it's a show. It's actors playing roles, reminding them that it's not indicative of real life and real scenarios. And then
I'll jump in there, Carl, because the acting pornography changes so quickly. The years ago, that used to be true, and that's something you should definitely mention. But now amateur pornography, so to speak, has proliferated so much, and people have become so desensitized to the acting that they're filming themselves in their day-to-day sexual activity. Just as you and I might have a camera just sitting up by our desks, there are couples today that just have a camera there because they're going to throw it on OnlyFans or some streaming service, and that's how they pay their rent. And there are thousands of people doing this casually. And most people don't know this because they're not like into pornography like that. But I just want to share that for those who are listening that might not indulge in pornography to that level, that if it's being filmed, I think that's the safe way to say that. It's fair to say that whoever is consuming it, there is the consumer themselves is not experiencing intimacy. So the truth is the person who is engaging in it might be intimate, right? I don't know. I don't think it is. It might be. But when you are viewing that, you're not growing intimacy in your life. You are not cultivating any positive quality in your life.
Yeah. And yeah, that's super important. And I can imagine sharing, at least with the guys, I'm not a girl, so I can't experience. But I can, from my own experience, I know masturbation to pornography has never felt as fulfilling. It's been far more exhausting than ejaculation with an actual woman, right? Like there is a physiological difference. And you can point to that and explain that to a boy that might not, you know, a young boy that might not have had sex yet, to say like, hey, having sex is different, is because that can be helpful. And the other thing I wanted to touch on that you mentioned briefly, I think it's so powerful that one of the best things you can do is show what an intimate relationship looks like.
Yes.
Working on your relationship. Because as parents, whether you like it or not, you are role modeling either the relationship they will have or a relationship they will not want to have, but will probably, due to patterns and behaviors, end up in modeling or mimicking. They'll either go the complete opposite or they'll go and have the same, right? And whether that's healthy or not. So the best thing you can do is work on having a healthy relationship so that you can model that and not hide. You know, don't need to hear about like, oh, he's tiptoeing around. We don't want the teenagers to know that we're having sex or whatever. Like I read that in some forums and stuff. It's like, yes, it might be embarrassing for them, but you know what? Wouldn't it be better to show that, hey, this is what a loving relationship looks like, that we still have sex, even though we have kids and all these things, as opposed to, no, let's hide it away as this shameful thing that the kids shouldn't know is happening. You know, it's okay if they see you spank your wife's ass. Like, it should be okay that you show a bit of, and it's probably more your wife that is going to struggle with overtly showing sexuality around the kids. But I can tell you that if you can, there's nuance to this. So I'm trying to make sure I don't say this in the wrong way, that it's used wrong. There is nuance to it. But if you can actually be able to be not vulgarly sexual, but, you know, spank her butt and things like that, and the kids are around, and that can be really powerful to your relationship and your sex life, reminding her that she's not just a mom, she's not just a parent, that you are lovers, showcasing that to the kids in a way that doesn't make your wife feel repulsed. That's why I'm saying there's a nuance. If you're overtly sexual around the kids, that can actually kill your sex life. But it's all I'm trying to say is don't hide it. Work on being a really healthy relationship. That's one of the best things you can do for your kids, and having that conversation. I'm not looking forward to having that conversation. Hopefully it's still a few years away for me and my daughter.
And for those of you who feel some kind of way too, it's just a gentle reminder that, I mean, I think Carl and I are also, many of us listening and speaking about things like this are coming from a place of privilege too. Just remember that most of the world is living in a very small place, a very tight space, the vast population, where everyone's hearing everyone having sex. Sometimes they're even all living in the same room. And that's most of the world. And they're not growing up fucked up or anything like that. They're just fine. I think sometimes we're all stuck in our privilege and the platinum problems we have. We're like, should I show? Some people just don't have a choice. Their kids grow up just fine. And I would say arguably not as messed up as our kids might, right? Not that they would grow up messed up, but not with the same problems.
Yeah. No, it's true. That's true. That's a really good point. Well, look, dude, I've loved this conversation. We could probably keep going for hours, but it's the end of your day and it's the beginning of mine. Couple of things. You've got a podcast. So I think if people want to go deeper with you on this, especially on the porn and sex recovery components, or we're not going to call it recovery, the reboot. What is your podcast called?
My podcast is called The Porn Reboot Podcast. It's everywhere. Audible, iTunes. You can find it everywhere.
Perfect. Well, make sure you subscribe or at least go and listen to a few episodes of that and see if it's for you. But if you've been listening this far, you're still listening to us, I'd say it is for you.
Oh, yeah.
Also, you can go and check out his website over at elevatedrecovery.org. If you're listening in the car and you didn't write that down, you'll find all of this over on the show notes, which you can find at rising.show. That's where this episode and all previous episodes, show notes, links to bios. So if you want to find JK, you want to go into previous episodes, you want to go deeper, go to rising.show. That's .show, not .com. And you'll find everything you need there. This has been an absolute pleasure to chat. JK, any final remarks, anything you want to leave the listeners with before we wrap up?
Yeah. I just want to say that for those, I think we talked about a lot of topics, but the core of this when it comes to addiction, in quotes, or when it comes to a compulsive behavior, especially if you're dealing with one sexually, is I just want to leave you with the reminder that whether you believe this or not, that you are worthy of being loved. And I think many of us deep down inside, we just don't believe that, or we feel that, you know what, if you knew who I truly was, whoever you think you are, then you wouldn't love me. And I promise you, this is one promise I can make, that you are worthy. I don't care. You may have a lot of layers to peel back, but I just want you to hold that thought and maybe find proof of it. And if you are a successful entrepreneur, if you're pushing, if you're trying to make something of your life, you have all the attributes that you need to prove that to yourself. So just don't give up on yourself.
I love that message. It's so
cliche as it sounds. It's super important.
Oh, but it's cliche because it's true. At the end of the day, like all the personal work I've done, at the core of it, it all traumatized people, everything. It all stems to this, am I loved? Am I enough? And that all stems from our childhood stuff, you know, but it's different. We all meet it in different ways, but at the core, as a human being, we just want to know that we're loved. And that starts, as you said, just knowing that you are worthy of that, whether that's in your current relationship, whether that's from a love of God, whether that's we're all worthy of it, you find it somewhere and then it extrapolates from there. That's been my experience, at least. Thank you. I really appreciate your wisdom, your time. I look forward to maybe we'll do another episode like this. We'll go in other angles.
Would love to be back. Yeah.
Cool, man. All right.
Yeah, thank you so much, Carl.
Until next time, guys, keep up the journey.
Hey, fellow dadpreneur, thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you've missed something said on today's episode, you can find transcripts, links, and other notes from today's episode, as well as all other episodes over at rising.show. That's .show, not .com. So head over to rising.show to get all the information that you need.
This episode was brought to you by Automation Agency. If you're sick of Fiverr and Upwork and want a reliable team of experts who can turn your marketing ideas into marketing duns, then head over to automationagency.com and check out what they can do. Whether it's graphic design tasks for social media, your presentations, or tech tasks like building funnels and email automations, or content creation tasks like copywriting and video editing, Automation Agency is the one team you need to help you market your business and free up your time to focus on more important things. So go and check out automationagency.com.